Hi guys, I don't normally run ads on this show, but this is the family business, luggagewarehouse.co.za. My dad, my brother, my stepbrother, my uncle have all worked for Luggage Warehouse directly, and I've done freelance brand strategy for them for years now. So it supports the whole family, it supports this show indirectly. So if you're looking for luggage, accessories, handbags and fashion stuff, even you can go to luggagewarehouse.co.za. And there are two products that I want to pull out for you here. Number one being Builder Set, which allows you to create your own combination of large, small, medium, check-in, hand luggage, all that stuff. And it gives you a discount for each additional bag you buy, up to a certain limit, I think. But you can get great discounts on big collections of big luggage. So if you're thinking of immigrating, it's the perfect way to kind of gear up for that. And the second thing I want to pull out is Luggage Glove, which is a protective sleeve that my dad invented. My brother has kind of perfected over the years. It's a thick 3D fabric mesh sleeve that pulls over your luggage and then locks closed. It's got a TSA lock. It's got holes for the handles, so it's quite convenient. It's not like single-use plastic wraps because you don't have to cut open a hole in the plastic to use the handle. You can take it off easily. It's got a combination lock, and it's much more sustainable because you're not just murdering turtles with single-use plastic. But it makes the bag much more difficult to get into, and it protects it from bumps and scrapes. And if you are emigrating, then those are two important things, because you might be carrying actual valuables in your check-in luggage, and because they're going to be heavy and you might be going a long distance, they can pick up some major damage. So Luggage Gloves do a great job of protecting your luggage in the long term. That's it for my pitch. Luggagewarehouse.co.za. There's a link in the show notes. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to South African Expats, the podcast for immigration-curious South Africans who are looking at their options. I'm your host, Jonathan Varnker. It's been a little bit of a hot minute since I've interviewed anyone on the show. Last week, I interviewed myself, which is a bit weird, or at least I told my own story. But this week, we are speaking to Jo Galloway, who is, in her website's words, an actress, a singer, a dancer, a writer, an international voice artist. She's lived all over the world. She's on stage and screen. She's got an IMDb page. She's been in shows like Cats and The Full Monty, Hairspray, all kinds of stuff. Today, we're talking about California, Los Angeles. She moved there to do the Hollywood thing as an actress, and I'm very happy to have her on the show today. Hi, Jo. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So, Jo, you moved to Los Angeles, right? That's been your biggest, kind of your longest home for the last little few years.
Yeah, I moved to LA in 2012. So for the last 10 years, I was hustling the streets of LA, I suppose. I had a short stint in New York, but primarily, yeah, I was in LA.
All right. So let's start with the story of how you ended up in LA. Where did you live in South Africa and why did you decide to leave?
So I've always wanted to live in the States. I think, you know, anyone in the performing arts, you have this kind of dream of the Hollywood dream, baby. You know, it's one of those. So from a very young age, I knew that I wanted to try and give that a go at some point. But I grew up between Joburg and Cape Town, but mostly in Cape Town. So I was born in Joburg, moved to Cape Town when I was, I think I was in about nine, did most of my training for theatre school and everything in Cape Town. And then I moved to London for a few, I was only there for a short while as well. I think it was under a year, and came back and moved back to Joburg because I was doing Buddy Holly back in the day then. And really, really always just wanted to try and get over to LA. So at the time I was married and we applied for a green card together, and I couldn't believe it when we actually got it. It was the most exciting day of my whole life because I've been trying for years and years. It took forever. And then I moved in 2012. I did go by myself, and it was the best thing I ever did, because I think you do go looking for, you know, the Hollywood dream, as they say, but I think you just discover so much more about yourself as a person on those kind of journeys too. So that was always the plan, was to move, was always to give that a go. And I did.
You moved for positive reasons, for going and following the dream and chasing the dream and all that stuff, which is great. You mentioned that you got a green card. Under what circumstances? As a skilled performer, or what category did you fall under?
So we worked with a fantastic lawyer, which I think most South Africans who try and go over to the States, they work with him as well. His name's Chris Wright, and he has the Wright Law Firm, which is based out of Los Angeles. And he gave us a couple of options. Because I was a qualified dance teacher, we could have gone through my qualifications because they are recognized internationally from the Waterfront Theatre School. Mm-hmm. Or we could have gone through my ex-husband, who had just actually shot a couple of international films. So it was kind of who was going to get the best, what was the best result going to be, really. So we ended up going through him because he just done this and that was more recognizable and kind of more current. And so I actually ended up getting it on, it was the EB1, which is the special abilities visa that we were both applying for, which is the green card. And when we got it, we got it through him because of that, but I got the spousal one because we were married. And then when we finally went our separate ways, you know, I then went off and used it. And that was my entrance into the States. But it's a tricky thing. Everyone thinks there's like two options with these visas, one being the green card, which is the EB1, and the other one, which is quite popular, is the O1. But the O1 visa pretty much costs as much as a green card, and it's a little easier to get. You have to prove a little less, although I think it might have actually got a little bit more complicated because this, you know, I did years and years and years ago now. But what's happened over the past few years is a lot of the studios don't want to take an O1 visa. They don't want to do the paperwork. And when you do get the difference between it, major difference is your green card allows you to work in any area you want as just a resident alien in the United States. Mm-hmm. Whereas an O1, you have to work specifically in your chosen field that you have now when you applied for the O1. So if you're going to be going into the arts, you cannot go and waiter. You cannot go and work in another area. So you have to only work in that chosen field that visa has been given or granted for, which limits you a lot, unfortunately. Oh, so recommendation from my side is just go for the green card if you can. It's the same.
Yeah. I mean, how many theater and performance students or professionals aren't also, you know, waitering or picking up some kind of other work and all that kind of thing?
Yes, you have to.
But what's interesting, I guess, about those visas is that often if you want to move to Europe for some reason, you need a specific job offer, and you'll lose that visa if you lose the job. But it sounds like in your case, as long as you're working in the same industry, you can change jobs, but you'll still keep the visa.
Yes. Yeah. So your green card basically gives you, it's almost like your temporary passport. So you can work as much as you want. The only difference with green card is you have to be within the country for 6 months of the year for 5 years before you can apply for citizenship. Those 5 years have to run consecutively so that you kind of bank that time. And once you've got those years, then you can then apply to become an American citizen. I'm not sure what the deal is with the O1. I'm sure it's quite similar. But if you kind of leave the country within the 5 years and you're out for longer than 6 months, and I think you can be out for a year, that's about it. Mm-hmm. And you can be turned away when you come back if you have been out for a really long time, even on a green card. Then if you were out during that time, you have to accumulate those 5 years from year one again.
Right. Back in 2012, when you moved, how long did it take you to depart South Africa from the decision to go and to actually getting into America?
It was pretty quick, actually. I bought a place in Joburg. I'm trying to remember the area, Northgate. Mm-hmm. And I was literally in it for, I don't know, maybe 6 months. And I was like, right, I'm going. That's it. And I just packed up everything and booked my flight and, you know, went to go and kind of reinvent. I think it was an interesting time for me because I had a lot of changes going on. Unfortunately, my father had passed away and I'd just gone through the divorce and all of those sort of things. So I was in this area of my life where I was like, right, new chapter, fresh start. Let's go out and see what the world has to offer while I'm still young enough to do it. So it was a kind of an instant decision. And then very quickly after that, I made up my mind to do it. I went. So it was quite a quick turnaround time.
Considering it was this new kind of change and all that, did you just take a few suitcases and off you went, or did you ship anything with you? Or
I arrived in LA not knowing anybody it was some money behind me that I'd saved, because obviously when I decided to go, I'd, you know, put stuff aside, and I prepped on a lot on a logistical level for years because I knew I wanted to go. So
sure.
Like getting the visa organized, the green card, making sure I had money behind me to go. That was stuff that was in place for years and years. But when I eventually arrived there, I arrived with three suitcases. I moved into a hotel in Santa Monica, which was the only area that I knew because I'd been there on holiday. And spent a week trying to figure out what my next steps were going to be and looking around, Ubering to places and to look at rentals and trying to figure out how I was going to get a car. And I mean, I didn't know anything when I moved there and I didn't have anyone to call, which was terrifying, but also very sorely needed, I think, for me to grow up a little bit and cut the apron strings.
Sure. Did you feel a certain stereotypical sense of you being the actress ingenue arriving in Hollywood with, you know, stars in your eyes, it's only to be crushed by the Hollywood industrial complex?
Oh my goodness. Looking back now, like I can totally see it. But of course, when you're there, you're like, I'm different. I'm going to do
I'm
this.
Special.
You know? I'm special. Like if anyone's going to do it, I'm going to do it. But then you kind of turn around 10 years down the line and you're like, oh, shame. Shame. She gave it a good shot, eh? But yes,
at
I can totally
see that.
At least
you went from Alabama or something, yeah.
But it is. It's the whole just arrived track 17. You know, you when you've been there a few years and you can see the actors and actresses rocking up and doing exactly what I did and having to learn things and the kind of stars in their eyes. And you're like, all right, your expectations will be managed quite quickly.
Prepare to work in a restaurant for a few years.
Yes. Right. Leave your ego at the door and prepare to hustle.
Yeah. Hectic. How difficult would you say the process was on a scale of 1 to 10 of moving from South Africa to the USA?
Oof, yeah, a green card, but getting the green card is not easy. The green card, you've got to, there's a lot of paperwork and there's a lot of criteria that you have to meet. You know, you have to have adjudicated in your chosen field. You have to provide readership numbers of newspapers or publications that you've had articles in so that you're relevant. You have to prove basically you're in the top 10% of your chosen field.
Wow, okay.
And that's the hardest part. Getting the green card for sure. And there is the green card lottery options and, you know, people have won it. It has happened. But I think there's like 10 points and you have to like meet 7 or 8 of them. And then they'll, you know, grant your green card for you. And you have to go for an interview. You've got to do background checks. You've got to then the physical, you have to go for a whole physical before you go and you get another TB shot and you got to, and I had the worst experience with that, with my physical, because I just had bronchitis and I had to go and do the physical. And one of the biggest things is tuberculosis. If you have TB, obviously they won't let you into the country. So I did the chest scan and everything. And they were like, we've seen there's something on your lungs. And I was like, what?
Oh my goodness.
And I mean, which made me completely panic. Yeah. Anyway, long story short, it delayed the process because I had to go for 3 weeks and go and spit into this petri dish to prove that I didn't have TB before they would let me pass my physical. And I was like, guys, I just had bronchitis. I promise you, I do not have TB. But it was a whole thing. Once you're there, it's difficult. It's difficult in a different way. It feels like South Africa a lot because it's quite similar in kind of climate and topography. And, you know, you've got San Francisco, which is Napa Valley, all the winelands like Stellenbosch. And you've got Big Bear Mountains, which is out serious. That's not such a change. But the people and the culture, as much as we think we know it, growing up on American TV is illuminating.
So there is a bit of a culture shock when you arrived.
Oh, 100%. 100%, yeah.
What were the things that struck you as the strangest and the most unsettling?
I think everyone, because everybody in LA or most people in LA are in the industry in some shape or form, whether it's producing, directing, or, you know, acting, writing. Every coffee shop's got some writer sitting there trying to pitch his next script to someone or something. It can tend to make people quite insular. And very protective. There's a self-protective mechanism that kicks in for everyone. So there's not a lot of generosity of spirit. And you, as a South African, we have a kind of a gentleness to us and a kind of almost apologetic side to us, even in emails where you're saying, you know, dear Jonathan, I'm so sorry to bother you. Would you mind if I could possibly preamble? And Americans like, Thursday, 2 p.m. And you're like, oh, gosh, okay. Have I done something to upset you? So I had to kind of get used to that straight to the point, straight down the line dialogue. And then, I mean, okay, so the little things, which is silly, but like, you know, with a South African accent, you are constantly asked, oh, you're from the UK. Oh, you're from Australia. Where are you from? And you're like, no, I'm from South Africa.
Right.
And then the feedback you get after that is always hysterical because they're like, how did you learn to speak English?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. Those kind of questions were all the time. I got them all the time. And the strangest thing for me is they don't think they have an accent.
Right.
This is the strangest thing. So I was working on a shoot with kids and they were like, oh my God, I love your accent. And I was like, well, you have an accent too. And the mothers thought this was hysterical. And I said, you do realize the rest of the world doesn't sound like you guys, hey? And they were like, no, someone from Texas. And they were like, no, someone from Texas, or, you know, they have an accent. This isn't an accent. Yeah. And trying to describe the difference between accents and dialects and, you know, the fact that South Africans are aware we also have a South African accent was hysterical to me, that they just don't think that they have an accent at all.
That they're just the normal human and everyone else is weird.
Of course.
Like everyone else is an alien of some kind, right? Yeah. How strange. Okay. You know, personally, when I visited Los Angeles for a little while, I found the massive motorways to be quite hectic. I don't know what's the name of that road? The one with eight lanes.
It's the 405, the professional traffic, yes. No, this is why if you date someone and you live on the west side, you don't date someone who's in the valley because you'll never see each other. Yeah, no,
right.
It just won't happen.
Right, right. And the other one was walking into, it could have been a normal grocery store or Whole Foods or whatever it is, but the sheer selection is so staggering that you actually can't make any decisions. You're just like, I don't know what. You know, there's 8,000 kinds of cereal.
You're totally right. I remember going to try and get washing powder or washing detergent, rather, as they say, and just standing in front of it going, I don't know. I don't even know what to do, like where to begin. And it's just wall. And the same with the milk. You've never seen so many different types of milk. Look, the selection is fantastic and it can be overwhelming when you're walking around like a Vons or a Ralph's or whatever it is for the first time. But also when you get used to it, then you come home and you're a little bit, it's like, oh, I miss it. I do. I want to have those options. And the fact that the stores stay open until like 10, 11 at night, you know, which is great. And everything, you're like, oh, I can't go to get whatever it is because the store's closed at 5 here. And I'm not used to that yet. I'm still trying to adjust back into that headspace.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we've covered the fact that you're back in South Africa. So you're in Hout Bay right now, and you've just recently arrived back from the USA. And how did that happen? And what's the plan?
So, yes, I am. I'm back. And luckily, now that I have my passport, I'm able to keep kind of one foot in each country, which is fantastic. It used to be that I was based in Los Angeles and I'd come home for season here and work a bit here and then go back. And now it's kind of switched on the other side. I think there was a number of factors as to why. I mean, one was I was tired. I was really tired of the hustle. And, you know, when you're getting a bit older and your priorities shift somewhat and you want a bit more calm and you want a bit more time with your family. Mm. And, you know, my mom's getting a bit older now. And my sister's just got married. And I want to kind of be much more involved in that side of my life now. So that was a big thing. But unfortunately, one of the biggest thing was my production company didn't make it through COVID. So it was a question of what do I do now? And, you know, I'm a big believer in when doors close, you know, sitting there and forcing them is not always the best option. So, you know, I try to find little avenues to figure out what I was going to do next. But ultimately, I'm also a believer in you make a decision in the first 5 seconds and then spend the rest of your time trying to justify it. So as soon as I kind of got to a point where I was like, I'm unhappy. I'm not happy anymore. And I'm losing the joy for what I'm doing. Mm. I'm losing the joy for performing, writing, directing. I'm losing the joy for all of it. And, you know, LA was in a bad way during COVID. And I mean, so was South Africa, of course. The industry just completely shut down. No one knew what they were going to do. You're living off your savings if you're not on unemployment. And like, it was just like, well, I need to do something to create a life that I can be calm and happy and fulfilled in and do what I love and love what I do. So I kind of came home to regroup. And who knows, you know, I'm a bit of a gypsy, always have been. So unless there is a specific reason for me to be anywhere. I probably will flit between the States and South Africa and just go where the work is, but definitely base myself back in my home in South Africa. Yeah,
sure. Sure. And there is certainly a practicality to predominantly living in a cheaper country. And then when you get work in LA, you go over there and then, you know, you earn well and bring it back here rather than spending rands in a dollar economy, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, yes, it's been, there's been tightening of the belt for the last 10 years for sure. It's been, it's not easy. You know, it is feast or famine, the same as it is here, but dollars, it's an expensive lifestyle when you live out there. Sure. Not as expensive as New York, but definitely, yeah. You don't want to have rands. You want to have dollars.
Right. So the other guy that I've spoken to in America is my old friend Shan, who lives in Colorado. And the
love
impression,
Colorado.
Yeah, it looks beautiful. I'd love to go. It seemed to me that the predominant, like Americans live to work, not work to live kind of thing. So how would you rate the hustle in Hollywood? Is it on a scale of 1 to 10? You know, is it a 12? Is it a 9? Because as you say, it's this always on, it's pitching for work, it's going to auditions, it's so much, you know.
I think it's a case by case basis more than just an overall blanket, because you also have a lot of actors' apathy and people who are very, very busy doing nothing.
Right.
So it is, you do, if you find the right tribe of people that come together and then you kind of create together, then the hustle is off the charts. But you've got the other side of it where you say, right, so-and-so wants to like write a short and shoot it. And 3 years later, we're still waiting to shoot the short that hasn't materialized. So it also gives people an excuse to sit back and kind of let the phone ring when the jobs come in, but be like, I'm very busy writing, or I'm waiting for this audition to come through, or whatever it is. So it is a percentage of, I would say the majority are very, very hungry in the beginning, and then it kind of weeds out the people that don't want to do it for the right reasons. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the big things that I think I had to learn about why I was doing it in the first place. And was it because I wanted to just go and be the next Charlize Theron and be a star in Hollywood when I moved out there? Absolutely. Of course it's what I wanted. And I'd be a liar if I said anything else. He was completely ego-driven on that side. But then I got to a point where I was like, why? Why do I want this? And what is this? What do I want to do with my life to be happy? And doing independent good work with really good directors, up-and-coming directors, and amazing performers that I've met, I was like, oh, this is why I want to do it. But I can tell you now that, like, if someone had said to me, you are guaranteed to win an Oscar or work with Martin Scorsese or Steven Spielberg if you stay in LA for another 2 years doing exactly what you're doing now, I would have said, thank you very much, but you can keep it. I'm going home to the beach and my family.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's talk about, when you're living in LA, did you ever stop in the middle of a normal day and then it suddenly kind of hit you that you're in this place? You have those moments where you go, oh, holy shit, I'm in LA. Like, what, did you have any moments like that?
All the time, either both positive and negative. I'll tell you a cool story. So when I went out with my sister on holiday years and years ago, I can't remember which year it was, like 2008 maybe. We went to Universal Studios and we did the Universal tour. You know, you get on the little train and you go around, they go, this is the soundstage for NCIS or whatever. And we did the tour and it was lovely and blah, blah, blah. Okay. Cut to, for movie terms, when I'd moved there, I did my first background job because I had to go back into background to get my SAG card to be part of the union. So, you know, as I said, you do what you need to do. There's no like, oh, I'm a lead in South Africa, therefore I'm a lead in LA. It doesn't work that way. You have to start from the bottom. Right. And I had my first background job and on a show called Guys with Kids. I think it was Jimmy Fallon was the producer on that. And I went and did my background, you know, sit in the background of the restaurant, pretend to eat food or whatever it was and get my first voucher and leave. And that was, so I was like, oh, wow, that's amazing. Like the last time I was on this lot was when I was a tourist.
Right.
few years later down the line, my agent sends me for an audition for this up-and-coming show, Seth MacFarlane show called The Orville.
And
I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know what it was. I mean, you know, I was like, that's an odd title. Mm. Okay, cool.
Star Trek satirical parody.
That's it, yeah. Right. So off I go, audition. I'm supposed to be playing this angry mother, and I booked it, which was unbelievable to me because, you know, you're fighting for every co-star, every line you can when your developmental talent, as they call it. Mm-hmm. And I remember after I finished shooting, because we were shooting Universal, and I got to the parking lot, and I still have the little card of like where they let you in and stuff. And I just stood and I looked over, and the little tourist
little NCIS set came
round, and I could hear them going, and here's where this is shot here. And da, 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 da. And amazing. I just had this moment of going, oh my God, I'm here. I'm on a lot at Universal being directed by Seth MacFarlane.
And there's a bunch of people on a tour thinking, who's that? Do we know her?
It was crazy to me.
Yeah.
And that moment just sat with me, and I was so grateful. I was so grateful in that moment to have been exactly where I was and to take stock of where I was. And it was a moment I will never forget. So definitely there's been moments like that.
Sure. There's in the film La La Land with old Ryan Gosling and
Rachel McAdams.
Rachel McAdams, right? In one of the first scenes, she's in a coffee shop and a famous star walks in and buys a coffee, and she admires that woman. And at the end of the movie, she is that woman. Like, she walks in and she gets a coffee and everyone wants her signature. So where now you're the person who's on the set making something and they're in the train going, hey, who's that? You know?
I wish I could be like, you know, bigger than that, but it's a small echo that, yes, in my way, for me, it was a huge accomplishment. I know it wasn't, you know, a lead on Breaking Bad or whatever, but it was a moment for me that just made me take stock for a second and just be supremely grateful for the work that I'd put in.
Sure. So this is a digression, but I love that movie, and my wife and I watch it all the time. But one other scene totally stood out for me in that movie was the audition scene where she is auditioning for a thing and she's crying, and it's one of the most powerful pieces of acting. And then the people who are auditioning her just like they take phone calls and they get interrupted and the guy cancels the thing. And is that a reality or is that kind of over the top?
I mean, I think it's highlighted somewhat because, you know, in this day and age, things have shifted a bit there. But yes, definitely, you do have the casting directors who, if they've got somebody, a casting assistant taking it, yes, sometimes it's very much like, right, the reader kind of reads without much emotion and you have to act your heart out to camera and it's like, thank you, goodbye, and that's it. But from all the auditions I've done in the room, over there, I would say I've always had it's been very respectful. It's been very professional. If you walk in solid, prepared, and respectful, I think you get the same back. The point of that scene is to show that you're kind of being dismissed, and you do feel very dismissed a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And the no's are strong. There's a lot of no's. So it's that rejection and that feeling, I think, that's being highlighted there. But yeah, I mean, I think it is better than it used to be.
And have you also had that experience where you go out into the waiting room and there's a, you know, 20 clones of yourself essentially waiting to go in?
Oh God. Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. Yeah, you are a dime a dozen.
So let's talk a little bit about living in LA itself, like the daily grind of it. You know, I've been there myself, and there's access to a lot of nature, or the beach on one side and forests and the valley itself and all that. And describe for someone who's thinking of moving to live in LA, obviously there's lots of different places, lots of different experiences, but broadly, what are the generalities of living in LA?
Well, my manager told me once, if you want to survive LA, you got to get out every few months. And she's not wrong. I think what you have to remember living in LA is you're living in California.
Yeah.
And when you remember you're in California, you remember there is so much more to see. As you were saying, you know, you've got the mountains, you've got the beach. You can go skiing in Big Bear, and then you can be on Santa Monica Beach all in one day, which is fantastic.
And there's a desert not too far south there as well.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Then you've got Joshua Tree, which is just fantastic. It's beautiful. There's amazing hikes. Santa Monica Mountains are beautiful. I think you need to take the time to recognize that's where you are, first of all. So it's not just highways and byways and Hollywood Boulevard. And it's kind of like if you move to Los Angeles and you, once you've been there a while, you don't go to the touristy places anymore. Obviously, you don't go down Hollywood Walk of Fame. And, you know, you can hike up to the Hollywood sign up Runyon Canyon, but you kind of want to find like a little one down in Malibu somewhere rather to go and hike to. It's an incredible place to live. The traffic is awful. It is always awful. You will never be able to get anywhere unless you leave between 11 and maybe hop us one, and then you can drive. Otherwise, you must leave an hour at least, or an hour and a half. So the traffic is definitely a thing. But you're living in the Truman Show with the weather. It's blue skies and palm trees every single day.
Right.
You don't have weather. I mean, if it rains in LA, everyone goes into a decline. They don't know what to do with it. It's hysterical. So yeah, I would say it's a very similar life to South Africa. Mm-hmm. The foods, I like the food, I like the weather. Going and doing all the outdoorsy stuff that we do in Cape Town is very, it's very similar kind of life out there. Mm. It's an easy transition for somebody to move lifestyle-wise from South Africa to Los Angeles. It's not an abrupt, it's not you're moving to New York in the middle of winter.
Yeah.
So I think on that level, it does make it a very good option for someone who's looking to move over to the States. It's a nice, easy kind of way of living. Also, it's like the same thing. You've got your car, you're driving around with your car. Mm. New York, you've got the trains. That's like moving to London.
Yeah.
So it's a gentle maneuver, I would say.
Right. So are there, I mean, you're obviously back home now, but when you were living in LA, did you have moments when you missed home? There were just, you know, the opposite of the question of when you suddenly realized you're in LA. Were there moments where you just got, oh man, I miss South Africa right now? And what would you be doing in those moments?
Usually drinking about 8 martinis and crying and saying, why the hell did I leave? So yes, there was many times I questioned my sanity, many times. I was like, why, what was I doing? What was I thinking? You know, you're alone in a studio apartment and you've been on set all day doing something that's, you know, either a small role or no role, you're standing in or you're doing background or whatever you're doing to pay the bills and keep your union going and your medical going or whatever it is. Yeah, there was a gazillion times where, especially with the thing of social media, where you're going, oh my God, this person's doing so well, and compare, sure, which is just ridiculous and must be stopped immediately. Mm. You know, I'd see someone in South Africa who was shooting something and I'd be like, why the hell did I move halfway across the world to be walking on a background role today? I mean, well, I could be at home auditioning for this, and there's so many international things going on in South Africa. Why am I not there? It's the grass is always greener situation.
Sure.
I think the hardest thing for me was my sister and my mom, like not being able to, because we are incredibly close. So close that the house I just bought right next door to my sister.
Right. And down the road from your mom.
And down the road from my mom. Yeah. But yeah, there was definitely times that I thought this was insane. And it was lonely. It was really, really lonely. And especially when you first moved there, because I didn't know where I was in relation to the city. I only knew this tiny little portion of West LA and Santa Monica. So for the first, like, oh, I don't know, a couple of months, I would get in my 1992 Chrysler Sebring convertible that I bought for $3,000 down in Orange County because I couldn't afford a car, and leaked oil all over the place. And I used to take that giant tank of a car because it was a convertible. So I thought, if I'm going to be like struggling in LA, I'm going to do it in a convertible. You know what I mean? Not realizing.
Totally. Enjoy the good weather. Yeah.
Yeah. Not realizing that I, you know, had no business driving the size of vehicle, but again, it was all I could afford. And I would drive like a couple of streets up to the nearest bar and then talk to the barman and talk to the people and then say, right, well, where else is there to go around here? And then kind of, they would tell me somewhere else and I'd reach out a little bit further and they'd be like, oh, where's that place? And then that's how I learned the city.
Sure.
Just from going through alcohol. I learned the city through alcohol.
Yeah, drink by drink.
Yeah, drink by drink. But it does, it's what you did, you know, it's what I had to do. Because, and then going to class and meeting people, obviously, that really helped because everyone's in class all the time, or you should be at least. And meeting people in the same interest, with the same interest as you and everything, really helped. But
sure,
even that, you know, you kind of go, I miss my friends and I miss my home and I miss the ease that I had here.
Sure, absolutely. Like definitely I could see when I visited that the scope and scale of Los Angeles makes it very hard to, and the weird shape of it, like New York for example, is on a grid system. So you can kind of go, this is there, that's there. Whereas LA is very asymmetrical and it's hard to imagine where you are within it. Right. So
oh, yeah. I imagine that could be intimidating. Absolutely. Oh, incredibly. Yeah. And I mean, when you also throw in there that you're driving on the wrong side of the road, on the wrong side of the car, and you know, you've got to figure that out.
Yeah.
It's a, it's, and also just stupid things, you know, with words, you know, and they say, even though we understand trash and gas station and whatever, when you switch it around and you're like, you know, the petrol station.
Yeah.
Or
you say a robot
shops,
and people are like, what?
That is the most hilarious thing to me because I did not put it together at all. And then I was like, always, you know, turn right at the robot. And they were like, what? I imagined the transformer coming down and like, know, I was like, oh, right.
Yeah, that is a particularly weird one of ours, okay, so let's talk about kind of one of the most important aspects of moving is people moving for a better quality of life, increased buying power and all that. So before we get onto the quality of life categories, do you feel like your overall, I guess, wealth increased living in the LA, living in LA versus South Africa?
Oh, goodness. I mean, I'm not a good example of that because, I mean, obviously the dollar is stronger than the rand, but I've never been so poor in my life because, you know, one minute you're doing a show that's paying you some good money and the next minute you're using that money to live because you haven't had an audition. So I think for somebody who's not in the industry, yes, of course, but earning the dollar is going to definitely put you in a better position.
Sure.
It's tricky freelancing as it is here, you know, to save money and you have to pay your bills and you have to do what you have to do. So I think mine's kind of an individual situation. I couldn't, it doesn't really apply to other people who are in the corporate world.
Yeah.
I the safety aspect for me was a big deal. Like I loved the fact that I could be a woman by myself and feel completely safe. I mean, the times I left my handbag lying around and no one took it and, you know, my phone was in the car and the car was unlocked and no one took it.
Yeah.
And shopping was put in the back seat and it was perfectly fine.
Mm.
That kind of stuff, I miss that feeling. Not saying that South Africa is just what the media portrays it to be overseas, which is ridiculous. It's far too extreme. Mm. But it is there is a level of tension that I feel here that I didn't feel living there. Just being a little bit more streetwise and a little bit more, okay, all right, I'm back home now. Just keeping eyes in the back of your head a little bit more.
Sure.
You know, making sure your handbag is zipped up, all that sort of stuff. The usual, don't put your bag on the passenger seat of the car. When I described, you know, South Africa with regards to the safety measures we take to my American friends, they couldn't believe that we had things like trailer doors. For them, that's like a storefront door.
Right.
Or we had beams in the garden or electric fencing. And I'd show them photographs. And because I'd walk through, you know, the suburbs there and there's these giant bay windows that are just like coming onto the road. And you think if someone had that in the middle of Cape Town or Joburg, chances are it's going to be smashed in. No burglar bars, no nothing. So that level of peace and freedom and calmness, I miss that a lot, definitely.
Sure. It's funny because according to American media that I take in, LA is wall-to-wall crackheads. So it's funny that, you know, it's funny that it's actually in your direct experience, it's much safer because I don't get an impression that LA is anything other than, you know, leaving LA with old Kurt Russell and it's gang wars constantly. And also, I guess to a degree over the last couple of years, like the Black Lives Matter movement and associated unrest has given this impression that LA is an unrestful place.
Look, I mean, it does have a giant homeless problem. Their skid row is quite excessive, especially after COVID. I mean, when I moved back from New York to LA, the amounts of homeless people that were under the highways and byways and all of that had it grown exponentially. And also, you know, with Venice Beach, which was a big deal because they just bussed people in and left them in Venice Beach. And this huge homeless problem popped up during COVID and before that. But again, during COVID, it was really bad. And then they had to be removed. And there was a whole thing about human rights. There's that issue is very real out there. And then you do have the areas, the same as we do, you know, in the flats or, you know, in that area of Cape Town, you've got Compton down south, which is definitely there's gangs down there, you know. So there are, it's the same as anywhere. You just have to know where to go and where not to go. But I think there's the level of desperation and the crimes here that are committed because of the amount of people who are desperate and unemployed and the value of human life is different almost. Like, I would be afraid someone would probably do something worse to me than just take my bag.
Sure.
Whereas in LA, I didn't feel that that was going to be an option.
Right.
But then you've got, you know, other issues with gun control, et cetera, which we can get into, you know, another. But
sure.
So, but yeah.
But overall, safety-wise, you felt much better in LA, which is fair enough. That's something I hear a lot. But let's actually break down some of those other categories from kind of 1 to 10. You can just give me a rating and a comment, a little quickfire round here.
Okay.
And if you haven't really interacted with that aspect of the life, I imagine considering how long you've been there, you will have experienced maybe all of these except education, you know, on a primary, secondary school level. But yeah, give me a 1 to 10 on healthcare in America, in your experience. Start with the big one.
Probably. So which is the bad? Is the bad down at 1 and 10
yes,
up at
10
is at the best?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to give it like a probably a 2 on healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Look, yes, there's some great doctors, and if you're lucky enough to be able to afford good healthcare, you're great. But, I mean, it's just trying to get good medical out there and trying to be able to afford good medical, it bankrupts you.
Yeah.
And, you know, thank God for Covered California and Obamacare and all the kind of concessions the government has made. But it needs to be revisited is my feeling.
Totally. Yeah. I get the impression it's a 2 and a 10 at the same time if you've got money, like a lot of stuff in the USA.
Okay. True. That is a very accurate read.
Right. Okay. Education. You said obviously that you were doing tertiary education constantly in the acting arts and all that. But do you have any other experience? So what's your rating there?
I wouldn't be able to comment on the school systems because obviously I don't have kids and I don't know anything about that side of it all, mm-hmm. to be honest.
Sure. Okay. C, work opportunity.
Ugh, the American dream. I mean, it's what you make it. So 10 for sure. You can create whatever world you want out there. It's definitely some, but it's again your industry. If you're corporate and you climb the ladder and you've got to have a certain amount of ruthlessness to be able to really crack it out there.
Right. Sure.
And I think you can just be careful not to lose your humanity within that.
Sure. All right. E, arts and culture, accessibility to live music and theater and movies and all that stuff. I imagine that's pretty high.
Yeah, no, definitely a 10 out of 10. And it's great because you've also got like the Hollywood Fringe Festival, which is all the, you know, the up and coming playwrights or producers, whatever, actors, everyone creates stuff. And for like 3 weeks, you've got this hub of entertainment every year, which you can just go from show to show to show. Some not as fantastic as others, but everyone's up there doing something. Right. And there's always open mic nights and live bands. Yeah, I mean, it's a hub of entertainment.
Sure. Yeah, it's literally the mecca of entertainment, so it makes sense. Restaurants and food, quality, cost, that kind of thing?
I would say probably about a 7. I mean, I think we have better food here in South Africa. I think we've got just better, more, I suppose, less...
Factory farming.
Processed.
Right.
Yeah. It depends where you go, really. But, I mean, of course, they're all into the organic, and then that's the whole kind of LA world. Everything's gluten-free and vegan and all the things. And so it's good. There's a lot of options of food, and everything is really accessible. You can have any food from anywhere in the world. I just think that they overfill their portions, which is a waste for me, which makes me irritated, mm-hmm. but that's just a personal pet hate about it. But there's nothing like a South African steak, hey? I mean, these Americans can come with their meat, but it's just not the same. And please don't tell me jerky is biltong, because I will take extreme offense to that.
Yeah. I actually read a couple of days ago that there's a startup focused on bringing biltong to the American market has been funded by seed funders, you know, like, so they've got capital now to actually take on the jerky industrial complex and bring biltong to the people.
There is one store that if anyone moves to Los Angeles, there is one store, and I think it's on Olympic Boulevard in going into West LA. No, I'm lying. It's Beverly Hills. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's called the European Sausage Kitchen, and it is run by like a German family, but they have Bovril, Robertson spices, proper biltong, boerewors, Omar rusks, Romani creams. Like when I was going through like my I want to be home things, straight to the European sausage kitchen. And I would just, and I mean, it's all way too expensive, but you're just like, I want HP sauce. I'm taking HP sauce.
Yeah.
This is it. This totally. Is my life.
Totally.
Yeah.
G, opportunity to travel.
10, because you are, you, as most Americans don't even have a passport, but they will travel within their country. And there is so much to see. I mean, I only did, I did a camping trip around the Northwest United States, and obviously I've done a bit of the East Coast, Washington, D.C., all of that sort of thing. But I mean, you can travel anywhere. But the cool thing about being on the West Coast is you've got the whole other side of French Polynesia to explore as well.
Sure.
So you've got all of those islands out there, you know, and they're all ridiculously overpriced and expensive. But if you can find somewhere to go and explore there, I mean, it's just beautiful. It is absolutely beautiful. But, and then, I mean, yes, it's a bit of a trek to Europe, which is, but you've got so much to explore within the United States. Mm-hmm. And you could spend, months traveling around there.
Sure.
Absolutely. And doing it that Route 66, geez, what a jaw.
Yeah.
So fun. Yeah. And then, of course, you're in New York. You can fly over down to the Bahamas on that side. Mm-hmm. So you've got all the little islands around. And then, of course, South America's right there, going down to Mexico, to Cancun. You know, it's all beautiful. So, yeah, I would say 10 out of 10 for travel.
Great. Awesome. So two more questions. Number 16, technically. How easy or difficult has it been to integrate into the culture and, I guess, the language?
I think when you get there, you got to realize you bought the ticket. You're now on the roller coaster. Mm. So you have to slot in with the way that the American life works. You can't be bulking against it and being frustrated. So like for a long time, like I was trying to like, why won't they say hello in the elevator in the morning? And it, like, and then it would upset me. And it's just because people just don't.
Yeah.
And so then you have to be like, okay, cool. And then little things would annoy me when they're like, have a good one or have a great night. And it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'd be like, it's not even nighttime. Why are you saying this to me? And stupid things to get your back up because you're just like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Like you need to let all that go and just like, see, you're living on their terms now. You've decided this is where you want to be and where you want to go. And when you do that, it's just so much easier. It really is.
Sure.
So yes, just use the word gas station. It'll really will help you.
Right.
Don't say petrol station. It just, you're just making a Rod Fuhrer back.
Do you ever just put on the accent just to forestall conversations about where you come from?
Absolutely. You know, when you're talking on the phone to someone who's like a service provider for like a cell phone company or your television or whatever, it's so much easier just to speak in an American accent just so we can have the conversation and it's done.
Yeah.
Otherwise, a lot of the time they're like not, they understand, but they don't always want to understand. So
right. It
just saves time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's also like the, when you're doing the date, you're writing the date down, you have to get used to writing the month first, then the day, then the year.
That's the dumbest thing.
I know. And also you're using, you know, miles and not kilometers. Yeah, that whole system. So, yeah, that's a definite, you have to integrate into that. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Okay, and then lastly, what advice would you give people considering moving to LA?
I think don't take all your stuff with you. Like I wouldn't take all your furniture and all your things and what. You can buy stuff there. Mm-hmm. It's just such an expense.
Mm.
If you're going to try to pack, unless of course you've got kids and you know, you're doing the big, big move of that. I mean, even that, like I would try and sell as much as possible. It's hugely expensive to move all your stuff over. I had moved a lot of my stuff back.
Mm.
So even though I went with nothing, you know, I had 10 years of stuff to bring back to South Africa and put into storage. And it's not a cheap exercise. So I would definitely do that. I think when you get over there, the first thing you need to do is, if you've obviously you found somewhere to live and you've obviously come over with some money behind you because you are going to need a cushion for a while till you get on your feet, is find out, you know, I would say Bank of America is the way to open a bank account. I prefer it to any of the other banks. Some people might do Chase or some of the others, but I think Bank of America I've had great experiences with them. And then, you know, you've got the basic things of just trying to get your social security number registered and all of that sort of thing. Once you kind of got those things in place, you can take a breath. But it's a wonderful, tumultuous roller coaster moving over to the States. And I don't regret a single thing, and I'm glad that I did it. And I think everyone should, you're right, it is that song. It is that song about
live in New York, but leave before it makes you hard. Live in LA, but leave before it makes you soft. Baz Luhrmann sunscreen, yeah.
And then I can't remember who it was. It was a famous actress, and they said, how do I get into Hollywood? How do I survive Los Angeles? And she said, take Fountain. Now, that is a road that drives through West LA, and it's like a back street. Right. So she's like, don't take the main streets. And I think that's quite a fun one as well.
Right. Awesome. Joe, thank you so much for your time and for that insight into living in Los Angeles. That was really illuminating for me, and I hope for the audience as well. Good luck in South Africa. I hope you manage to settle nicely and enjoy your new home now that you're moving into it soon. And yeah, we'll chat again soon.
Absolutely. Have a beautiful day.
Thanks. Cheers, cheers.
Bye.
South African Expats is produced by Jonathan Varnker and brought to you by Ping Productions.